Good morning, human rights activists all over the world. Welcome back to Communication Workers of America, CWA Human Rights Hour, Power, Justice Field Hour, Talk, Solidarity, and Worker Power, right here, fresh off the plane from Orlando, Florida. KYOK, 1140 a.m. in the all-new 106.5 FM. If you are visiting the beautiful city of Houston, you can take us with you on kyokradio.org. Listen and subscribe every Thursday at 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on kyokradio.org or the CWA Strong app or your favorite podcast player. Search for CWA Hour of Power on your favorite podcast player. Thank you for joining us on the CWA Human Rights Hour Power Radio Show this morning. It's about us. That's right. It's about us, working agreements, solidarity, living wages, worker power, and simply human rights. Honk your horns if you support workers. We have a phenomenal show lineup with Mykia Jones, Sir Reginald Small, Timmy Awale, and Tay Akins today. So don't you dare change that dial. Tune in this morning because we will be discussing Black History Month. Why do we have it? Why? What are the benefits? Spotlight of our own Reginald Small, Tea with Tay, actions and policies from the new administration, the impact and the impacted. And then, of course, we must have the Union Buster of the Week with Timmy Wiley. Our union voices are ringing in every district from Alaska to Maine, Texas to Minnesota, Canada to Puerto Rico, because we don't play at CWA. Our union brothers, sisters, and siblings at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette have been outside for 26 months striking on the picket lines. And yet, while they are out striking, they are still churning out the news with facts for you and me. Let's go show our support to them by making sure we subscribe to unionprogress.com. Once you subscribe to this free publication, how about going over and donating to their strike fund at cwa.org/PPG-donate. And I just heard someone shout, "When we fight, you got it, we win." CWA stands strong with AFGE and our union allies to protect federal employees. On Tuesday, February 11th, the Communication Workers of America, CWA, joined our union allies, including the American Federation of Government Employees, in a powerful rally at Upper Senate Park in Washington, D.C. Together, we stood united to defend the rights of federal employees and demand that their voices be heard. Federal employees, who include the doctors and nurses caring for our veterans, the dedicated professionals ensuring Social Security benefits are distributed on time, the health and safety inspectors keeping our workplaces safe, and the National Labor Relations Board's agents who enforce our contracts are under siege. The new administration is blatantly ignoring their legal binding union contracts and stripping them of the freedom to perform their jobs without political interference. This first isn't just about, this fight isn't just about federal workers. It's about all of us. CWA members are directly impacted as we profoundly represent the staff, one of the largest unions advocating federal employees. When their rights are under attack, our entire movement feels the impact. CWA and AFGE stood shoulder to shoulder at this rally, along with other union allies, to send a clear message. We will not allow these attacks on workers to go unchallenged. We will continue to fight for fair contracts, respect for workers' rights, and protect the protections that allow federal employees to serve the public free from political interference. The fight is far from over, but CWA remains committed to standing with AFGE and our labor allies to push back against these unjust attacks and defend the rights of workers everywhere. Solidarity forever. You're tuned into KYOK 1140 AM and the all-new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you on kyokradio.org or just search for us on your favorite podcast player. Colonel Harry Stewart Jr., we gather today to honor the extraordinary life and enduring legacy of Lieutenant Colonel Harry Stewart Jr., a remarkable individual whose unwavering courage, exceptional skill, and relentless perseverance played a pivotal role in breaking barriers and reshaping the course of history. His narrative is one of triumph in the face of adversity, steadfast determination amid injustice, and unparalleled excellence in the pursuit of service to his country. Born on July 4th, 1924 in Newport News, Virginia, Harry Stewart Jr. was destined for greatness. At the tender age of two, his family relocated to Queens, New York, where he spent his childhood mesmerized by the sight of airplanes taking off and landing at LaGuardia Airport. Every roar of an aircraft engine fueled his aspirations as he envisioned himself navigating the vast skies. However, for a Black man in the mid-20th century America, the journey to become a pilot was daunting and filled with societal barriers. Yet, as the winds of change began to blow, opportunities arose. The U.S. Army Air Forces initiated training for Black pilots at the historic Tuskegee Institute, a beacon of hope for many. Seizing this chance, Stewart embarked on an intense training regimen, honing his skills and determination. By the time he joined the 332nd Fighter Group, famously known as the Tuskegee Airmen, he was armed with both knowledge and resolve, ready to showcase his talents. On April 1st, 1945, the skies over Austria became a battleground where Stewart's extraordinary abilities shone. In a single daring engagement, he accomplished the remarkable feat of shooting down three German 190 fighters. This incredible achievement, shared by only a select few pilots, earned him the Distinguished Flying Cross, a prestigious honor recognizing his bravery and proficiency. Throughout his deployment, Stewart flew 43 combat missions, providing vital escort to bombers, traversing of hostile territory, and proving to the world that Black pilots possess unmatched prowess and determination. But his fight did not end with the war. The battle for racial equality, labor rights, and human rights continued on the home front. In 1949, long after conflict had concluded, Stewart and his fellow Tuskegee Airmen faced another formidable challenge as they stepped into the inaugural U.S. Air Force Top Gun competition. Engaging in fierce rivalry with the nation's elite pilots, their exceptional skills led to a hard-fought victory. Yet their triumph remained unsung for decades, shrouded by the racial prejudice of the time. This stark reality exemplified the multifaceted adversities he and countless comrades faced, not only in the theater of war, but also within their own homeland. Despite his undeniable achievements, Stewart faced the bitter sting of racial discrimination, which barred him from pursuing a career as a commercial airline pilot. Undeterred by such injustice, he resolved to carve a different path. He obtained a mechanical engineering degree from New York University and forged a successful career in the aerospace and energy sectors, ultimately rising to the position of vice president at ANR Pipeline Company in Detroit. His resilience was not just personal, it was part of a broader struggle for civil rights, labor rights, and the recognition of Black excellence in professional fields where barriers had long been erected. Stewart's life and service stand as a profound example of how the fight for civil rights is deeply intertwined with labor rights and human rights. He and his fellow Tuskegee Airmen shattered the myth of Black inferiority in aviation, demanding a seat at the table in an industry that they had long excluded them. Their victories laid the groundwork for future generations of Black pilots, engineers, and military officers. Their struggle was not just for personal advancement, but for the collective progress of an entire people seeking equality, dignity, and justice in every aspect of American life. Even in retirement, Stewart's legacy continued to inspire and educate future generations. In 2019, he co-authored Soaring to Glory, a Tuskegee Airman's firsthand account of World War II, a poignant memoir dedicated to ensuring that the remarkable story of the Tuskegee Airmen would forever remain in the annals of history. He dedicated countless hours to preserving their legacy, imparting knowledge and emphasizing that courage and excellence transcend racial boundaries. Harry Stewart's extraordinary contributions did not go unnoticed. In 2007, he and his fellow Tuskegee Airmen received the Congressional Gold Medal from President George W. Bush, a long overdue acknowledgement of their valor and dedication to the nation. Stewart emerged as a fervent advocate for Black aviators and stood as a living testament to what it means to persevere against adversity. His journey is a testament on the intersection of military service, civil rights, and labor rights, proving that these fights are one and the same. Lieutenant Colonel Harry Stewart Jr. peacefully passed away on February 2nd, 2025, at the remarkable age of 100. Though he may no longer be with us, his legacy will forever soar through the skies, much like the very planes he once piloted. His journey is not merely a testament to a storied past, but serves as an illuminating beacon guiding us into the future, reminding us that no barrier is insurmountable, no dream too distant, and no injustice too great. May we pay tribute to his memory by continuing his fight for equality, sharing his inspiring story with others, and relentlessly pursuing excellence in every endeavor. His service reminds us that the pursuit of justice, whether on the battlefield, in the workplace, or in the fight for civil rights, demands courage, resilience, and an unwavering belief in the dignity of all people. Thank you, Lieutenant Colonel Stewart, for your unparalleled service, unwavering sacrifice, and the indomitable spirit. May you rest in eternal peace and comfort in the knowledge that your remarkable legacy will never fade from our hearts and minds. You are tuned into KYOK 1140 AM at the all-new 106.5 FM. If you're on the go, you can take us with you on kyokradio.org. Listen and subscribe to us on CWA Strong app or your favorite podcast player. Search for CWA Hour of Power on your favorite podcast player. Next, we have Timia Wiley discussing Black History Month. Why do we have it? What are the benefits? Good morning, Timia. How are you?
Good morning, Errol. Good morning, KYOK listeners. Black History Month is celebrated every February in the United States. It serves as a time to recognize and honor the contributions, achievements, and history of Black Americans. It was officially recognized in 1976 by President Gerald Ford after being proposed by historian Carter G. Woodson, who initially created Negro History Week in 1926. Woodson chose February because it coincided with the birthdays of Abraham Lincoln, February the 12th, and Frederick Douglass, February 14th, two significant figures in the fight against slavery and for the rights of Black Americans. So while we have Black History Month, one, recognition of contribution and achievements. The primary purpose to shine a light on the overlooked or underrepresented contributions of Black Americans to history, science, culture, politics, and society. Despite Black Americans playing a crucial role in shaping the country, their contributions were often minimized or ignored. Reason number two, combating racism and stereotypes. Black History Month provides a platform for educational institutions, media, and the public to confront and challenge harmful stereotypes and misconceptions about Black culture. It encourages understanding and awareness of Black experiences. Number three, cultural pride. It also serves as a time for Black communities to celebrate their heritage, culture, and identity. It fosters a sense of pride and unity among Black Americans and helps preserve cultural traditions while also educating others. So what are the impacts of Black History Month? Number one is education and awareness. Over time, Black History Month has been a significant impact in terms of education, schools, museums, and cultural institutions. Use this month to teach about the history, the struggles, and the accomplishments of Black individuals in America around the world. The month helps to broaden people's understandings of history and culture from different perspectives. It also helps with cultural shifts. The observance has helped to foster a more inclusive view of history, acknowledging that the contributions of Black Americans are integral to the fabric of society. This has influenced not just education, but also how media and entertainment portray Black culture, giving rise to more nuanced and diverse representations. It inspires future generations. Black History Month has inspired many young people, particularly Black youth, by showcasing role models who have fought for justice, equality, and excellence in their respective fields. It encourages the next generation to continue pushing for positive change. It increases dialogue on racial issues. While it is a time of celebration, Black History Month also serves as a reminder of ongoing racial injustices. It creates space for important conversations or inequity, inequality, racism, and social justice, prompting action towards addressing systematic issues. To sum all of what I said just up, Black History Month is not just a time to reflect on the past, but also an opportunity to continue learning and striving for equality, justice, and a more inclusive future. It has made a lasting impact in raising awareness and honoring the ongoing contributions of Black Americans in society. Back to you, Errol.
Thank you so much, Timia Wiley. You can listen to us every Thursday, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Central Standard Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and 8 a.m. Pacific Time on KYOKRadio.org or on your CWA Strong app or your favorite podcast player, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube Music, iHeartRadio, and Podchaser. Search for CWA Hour of Power on your favorite podcast player. Touch your neighbor and say, when we fight, we win. Up next is Tea with Tay. Good morning, Tay. I understand you have some hot tea to spill this morning.
Good morning, KYOK listeners and my union family. And yes, we do have some tea to spill here this morning. So, everyone, kick your feet up, grab your tea, your coffee, whatever keeps you warm, because today we're going to be talking about the impact and the impacted from the latest policy changes and actions that have taken place, especially under Project 2025. So if you were with us last week, you know we got into a very, very good discussion about the current attacks on us. And I want to go back to last week because to understand what we're talking about, you first have to understand what we're talking about when we say the actions and policy changes. So these are not just like regular laws, which we would go through Congress. The policies, these policies are basically passed down by the current administration, and it's a this is what we're going to do kind of situation. But here's the thing. These policy changes, they don't create new laws, but they change how existing laws are enforced. So some of the most powerful moments in America history have come from policy changes like Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation or Truman's integrating the military. But on the flip side, they can also be used to strip away rights, and that's what we're going through here today. So we're going to talk about last week we got into DEI. It was a very good conversation. We had the pleasure of speaking with Tamia Wiley's father, Mr. Carl Wiley, and he gave us some information about the disinformation and the misinformation when it comes to DEI and what that really looks like and means for everyone. It just means last week I told Tamia when we had a talk, he said accessibility. That's what that means. So this week, I want to kind of dig a little deeper with everyone and talk about everything that is currently under attack. So, human rights, the current policy changes or actions that are being implemented are targeting LGBTQ plus protections, immigration policy, racial equality initiatives. Some of these actions are basically making it easy for businesses to deny services based on religious freedom. Did you hear that? Based off of your religious freedom. Does that sound familiar? It sounds like deja vu all over again, doesn't it? So these are the things we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the attack on the labor rights, women's rights. We had a guest last week, and again, we want to jump back into what we talked about last week because I don't feel like an hour was enough time to actually get into or dig into the details of the effect of these policy changes and who they're really going to impact. And that's you and me. That's all of us. So I want to open the floor so we can have a discussion regarding what's going on with the women's rights. So you know that the reproductive rights are under attack all over again. The safety and the health of women is basically under attack all over again. We're implementing policy changes that are telling women what's best for their bodies when sometimes you don't know what's best for their bodies because you're not a woman. So I want to open the floor so we can have that discussion. So what, how do we all feel about the recent action when it comes to the policy change or actions against women's rights?
Well, I'll just say this. No one should tell anyone what they should do with their own body. There needs to be some type of body autonomy that's not gender specific. And I think that that's basically where the conversation needs to stop, right? Because in reality, when we look at it, no one is telling a man what he should do with his body. Right? No one tells a man what they should do with their body. So I believe when it comes to body autonomy and what you should or should not do with your body, that should be between you and your doctor, and that's it.
And you are correct, Mykia. So the defunding programs like Planned Parenthood are limiting the access to abortion services and things like that. Those are things that we're talking about. And the misinformation is that an abortion means that you sometime this is what you want. I had the pleasure of talking to a young ER tech, and she was discussing the fact that, after you have a miscarriage, the procedure that they implement after that miscarriage is considered to be an abortion, but it's deadly to have a fetus in you, or you're not able to get the proper procedure done unless you're almost dead, is what she said. Doctors are scared to help women because of the policy changes that are being currently implemented. And I don't think anyone's life should be on a ballot or in the hands of the government or anyone else.
Right, and it's becoming really extremely dangerous because I know there's a few small towns not too far from where I live where there aren't any doctors. There are literally zero OBGYNs in the area in these towns because they are afraid of what may happen when it comes to policy changes. I think that what we need to start to consider is, again, the human aspect of human rights, and just some things just need to be separated, right? Like, there shouldn't be a reason to dictate, like you said, with law or legislation, what someone does to their bodies, right? There hasn't been legislation to someone going to the dentist. There's not legislation for people who want to go get hair transplants. There isn't legislation for somebody when, how to fix your femur if that gets broken. There's not legislation for athletes when they damage their Achilles. It does not make sense to me that there's legislation or rules or people that are having these conversations about women's bodies when it's unnecessary. Like, for me, there's really no reason for this to be a conversation outside of, again, between a woman and her doctor. There's no reason for it.
You're absolutely right, Makia. There's absolutely no reason, and there's absolutely positively no reason for anybody to think that they can make a decision for somebody when they don't even have the reproductive organs to even have to be able to even make that kind of decision for themselves. Like, who are you, in my humble opinion? But I'm gonna digress.
But how do you tell them?
Can I?
I was going to say, how do you tell a medical professional, someone who went to school for years, what they can and cannot do based off of your opinion and what you think is right when they know that they went to school, they took an oath to save someone's life, but my career is on the line because you made this policy change or you think that this is what's best. I worked a long time to tell you what's best, and this is what is best to help everyone. You shouldn't, it shouldn't be something that's in the administration's hand. That's what I will say.
I agree, and I think, I guess I said, but there is no but there to anything you all have said. But it's something that's been ongoing for a long time, for years, and it has taken politics has taken priority over the humanity side of this particular issue. So it was just a matter of, we're just going to get this overturned. We've been trying to do this for the last 50 years and we finally got it. But they didn't look at all the little pieces, the little parts to the puzzle. And so now it feels like I'm not hearing the outrage anymore in it. It's becoming a norm. I think people are becoming numb to it. It's just something else that has happened. And as a matter of fact, when you first brought the subject up, I was thinking, you know, when we've initially, we talked about new administration type things or changes that had come into effect. Well, this has been in the movement before, you know, before that. And so, where do we go from here with it? And no, I don't think it's fair that someone can tell someone what they should or should not do with their body. I'm a person, I believe in options. I believe that if the option should be there, whether I believe in it or I'm for it or against it, I believe that anyone should have the options to make the sound choice for what's good for their home, for their body, for their life at that particular time.
So what I can
Correct.
say
And
to what you
one
just said, Reginald, really quickly, and then Errol, I'll let you go, is I think that the fight is being fought somewhere else. I did see that this past election cycle, a lot of the fight was done on the state level, and a lot of states and people voted, and those things were overturned in the state. I just think that for me, it's like the whole thing for me that I just can't get past is that it should not be an issue in any capacity. The fact that it wasn't an issue before, or we fought against it, or they wanted to overchange it for 50 years, like all of that for me is irrelevant to the fact that it's an unnecessary conversation. And there are so many other things that actually impact us all that are relevant to society in our day-to-day life that we don't discuss, that isn't on the ballot, things that that we like. Climate change. That's something that we really need to start considering. You know what I mean? Like, that's something that we need to have a broader discussion about. That's something that's impacting us every day. That's something that's, look at all the wildfires and the snowstorms and tsunamis and monsoons and tornadoes and hurricanes and things that are really impacting people's everyday lives, taking the lives of millions every year, damaging people's homes, impacting people's livelihoods, like people lost their jobs, schools, houses, businesses, everything. That's something that we really need to be discussing. That's something that needs to be on the ballot. That's something that we need to have a conversation about. That's something that we can actually have dialogue about because it impacts us all as a collective. What I choose to do with my body has absolutely nothing to do with anyone else outside on the side of my voice.
So it should, whether it should or should not, we're in a reality situation where it is a conversation. Someone has made the decision. So I think we've passed whether we should be having the discussion or whether it's right, wrong, or indifferent. Where do we go from here with it? I mean, because if someone has made the decision on your behalf of what you can do with your body. And I think that's the harsh reality. And I might be being a little over dramatic, but it is a reality that has already happened. The ship has already sailed. Where do we go from here?
All I'm going to say is, this is my turn this time. Why don't we get, I mean, why don't some congresswomen start drawing up some bills for men to get vasectomies?
Okay, no. Still, no. The point here is it shouldn't be there in at all, right? You know what I mean? Like, if literally, right? If I wanted tomorrow to go and have plastic surgery, right? No one would care. No one would bat an eyelash. I can literally change my whole entire physical appearance if I choose to do so, right? And no one would care. So the fact that we even have to have the conversation about changing legislation, it shouldn't be legislation. That's like, it shouldn't be something determined by someone else. Like, it just should not, that should just should not exist. And there's so many other things, just like, you know, when you think about, again, body autonomy, we think about the attacks on our trans siblings. And it's like, if this is what these people want to do, if this is what they feel like they were born, this is how they feel like they were born, if this is what they want, it does not bother, it doesn't impact you. Let them live. Like, where is our
It's none of
humanity
your
as a
business.
society? Where is our humanity anymore? Like, we literally have taken a turn or a spin or a jump or a leap or a fallback to minding everybody else's business so much so that we care more about somebody else's business than our own. You have people literally, you know, arguing and fighting and foaming at the mouth about things that have nothing to do with them.
And
Nothing to do with them.
you're
I
making almost lost it on that foaming at the mouth. Come on.
You have a group of people making decisions for other groups of people without even having a conversation with them. They don't understand it at all, and they're taking this
Understand
really
it.
high up look at people, and they're making these decisions. And I know they couldn't be having a conversation with them, because if so, they would see the humanity in it. They would get another side of the story. Sometimes
Right.
I think it goes back to politics.
Sometimes people don't want to have those real conversations because they don't want to confront their own ignorance sometimes. Sometimes when you have a conversation with someone that these things affect, then it's like, oh, I see your point of view. And now I have to go back and tell everybody else that this isn't my business. Some people don't want to face that reality sometimes. And that's just my opinion, Reginald. Sometimes you got those prideful people and it's your ego. I've been raised like this. I don't want to admit that I've been wrong this whole time and programmed this whole time to believe this way. That's why so much is changing now, because so many people are able to speak their truth. And I think that's what's important. And we need to take time to have those conversations. The people that we elect should be able to come down and have conversations with the people who helped them get into their positions, so that we can tell you how these things really do affect our communities, because you don't hear us.
But you know what?
You're
I think we need to
absolutely
also
right. And
take a look at, and I'm so sorry, Errol, because I'm just charged up today, but it's like, certain things should not be political, right? Like, let's start there. Certain things should not be political. Things that should be political, in my humble, really small opinion, should be things that obviously affect us all as a collective, right? As a society. How are we able to come together and navigate this world in a way where we can all, you know, get along and be productive and just, you know, live a full, fulfilled life, right? Those are things, like, again, things that impact us, like, you know, taxes and education, infrastructure. Things that literally affect everybody else, no matter where you are, no matter what you're doing, right? If the road's messed up, that affects all of us, right? That means, hey, you can't get to work, kids can't get to school, products can't get delivered to where they need to be. Those are things that we need to discuss as a collective. Things that have nothing to do with you know what I'm saying, or anybody else, like your own personal things, should not be political things. And I don't understand why we decided that that's what we're going to make priority, right? Right now, it seems like a lot of things that have been prioritized in our society politically are things that have nothing to do or really don't impact our society at all. And I feel like it's all rooted in the same things as always: systemic racism, classism, misogyny, and capitalism. These are all things that have literally nothing to do, right, with politics, but here we are.
and don't forget patriarchy. Okay,
oh,
right.
yeah, I was trying to get that out,
That's
but
there.
somebody's just walking all over me today. But I'm gonna take it today because I've been ghost for the last 2 hours. But and you're apps, and I agree with my Kia, because mandating medical procedures infringes upon an individual's bodily autonomy. That's just it. I should be able to be free to make the decision that I want to make. And did not the 14th Amendment give us due process clauses that protect citizens against unwarranted government intrusions into our personal decision making? Did it not? So why is the government telling anybody what to do with their body? See, I mean, that's just asinine to me.
And I know we can go on this one all day, but let's talk about how this actually contributes to the attack on healthcare. So
Yes.
we are trying to remove the funding for healthcare, but we are attacking health. Does that make sense to anyone?
Yeah. Yes.
No, it doesn't. And none of it makes sense. I don't know what he's talking about. Yes,
Doesn't.
no, it
I mean,
doesn't.
I'm
You're
agreeing with
funding
what
and
you're
taking
saying.
away.
That's what I'm saying.
I got it doesn't make sense though. So why would we have this on the ballot and then have you also removing funding for healthcare, things such as even cancer research.
And treatments and medications and
People,
diabetes med and di and diabetes med medication
have you
and all
heard
types of
how this
medication.
medicine has gone? We couldn't afford it before. Now look at what is happening. There, I'm reading articles, and I'm sure it was before just recent, but I'm reading articles now talking about how someone's inhaler went from $60 to $500. How is that even possible?
See,
How
and that's
I
what I'm
mean,
talking about. See,
that's
that's
what I'm
what I'm
talking
talking
about.
about. Things
Ridiculous.
that need to be regulated, right? We're not prioritizing them, right? People need medications to live and to survive. Like, that's literally a life and death situation, right? This is literally something that impacts all parts of society. These are the discussions that we need to be having, right? So it's like, okay, as a pharmaceutical company, you can charge whatever it is that you want to charge for this medication, even though you know that these people's lives absolutely depend on it, right? And we won't put any type of restrictions on that. But I'm gonna restrict you from, dyeing your hair. Like, it just doesn't make any sense, right?
It
Because when
makes
you think about it.
it makes a lot of sense to me. Follow the dollar. It's
Oh,
about seeing who
yeah, I
can
follow.
make the money. It's a profit margin, so it makes sense. Is it right? Is the question? No, it's probably not. But it's all about everyone here is trying to make their fortune in this.
And is anybody taking in consideration that we give these medical companies tax dollars to develop these
And that's where
medicines?
I was about to go with it, right? And this is what I was
Okay.
saying too about, living in the capitalist society that we live in. It's just extremely disheartening because, again, like Reginald said, we're trying to follow the dollar. So are we even concerned about really saving lives or preserving lives?
No. No,
Mm-mm,
that doesn't
no.
matter anymore.
They're
Absolutely not.
making.
Look at the price of insulin, how it shot up. Absolutely not. It went
I
from the
mean,
cap was what, $35 before?
yeah, and didn't somebody have a action and policy to change that?
Absolutely. Yes,
Okay.
it's already changed. The price has gone up already.
And
It
this is.
was
Retracted in one of those new policy changes where there used to be restrictions on the price of certain
Life-saving.
certain drugs
Patient.
for certain things, and then now that's gone. And people are going to lose their lives. And if people don't lose their lives, they're going to lose their livelihood. We're going to go back to a time where people have to make a choice between insulin and food and electricity and their medication. You know what I mean? Like, if you can't get your medication, then you can't work. We're a union. We're all about labor. You can't work. You can't go to work. You can't provide for your family. You can't provide for your family. What happens then? Then again, we were talking about, a couple weeks ago about the homelessness epidemic. It's a whole snowball effect, and it's a slippery slope when we don't take people into consideration, right? Because
And
we
I'm sorry,
establish
go ahead.
government, right, to protect our societies, right, and to make sure that they're functioning and they're successful. That's the whole point of government, is to have a successful, functioning society where we can all coexist together. Why are we not prioritizing the things that really matter? Like, because I'm about to say something about, the new bodies of water and name changes about things like that, but I digress. But that's what seems to be more important than a lot of other things today.
And we have millionaires, billionaires making decisions for the rest of us that are not feeling these effects. And they're not feeling these effects in their pocketbooks nor in their morals.
Oh no,
And I
they're feeling the
digress.
effects. No, they're feeling the effects. They're going from billionaires to trillionaires. And
Okay,
that's
well,
why it's going on.
okay.
And I'm gonna digress.
And that's where our outrage needs to be, is that's
Exactly.
we need to be
Yes.
upset about these things. And we need to be remembering that as a collective, the people are the power. I say that all the time. We are the power, but we forgot about our power. We allowed the new administration or any administration to run the show when, in all actuality, we do. We are the people going and working and breaking our backs to give you those little bit of dollars that made you a billion millionaire. We are the people who assisted you into getting where you are. But again, sometimes we forget that as well. We forget that the people have the power. These are the things that we need to be outraged about. The things that we're talking about on the show today are the things that we need to be outraged about. We are getting sidetracked by the snark remarks or the little funny clippings and things like that that we're seeing. No, we are being distracted. Do you see what we all just said is happening right now? This is happening in real time.
You're absolutely
It is.
correct. And everybody thought this, we were just speculating when the elections was going on or prior to the elections going on. This isn't speculation, it's happening. So my thing is, Tay, what can we do? This is what we need to do. We need to build a road to resistance.
Exactly. We need to get together and we need to talk about how that, well, we've talked enough. I listen,
No, we have talked enough. We gotta stop. We gotta
talk
stop
enough.
idolizing people that are not in the same tax bracket with us, that don't have the do not have our interests at heart. They don't care about you. They do not care that we have more in common with the poor people in Gaza than we do with the rich people, And I'm gonna leave it at that.
Y'all saying we need an action plan like Mikeya gave us.
We do the action plan. We have got
Action
to stop
plan.
idolizing people who don't care about us. I don't understand what's
That's
so hard about that.
and that my thing is, when we start voting, we just send these people that we've always sent, and they don't have our best interests at heart. This is why we need to have some grassroots organizers running, CWA leaders running for these offices, both locally and nationally. I digress.
I think another
I'm
thing
trying to
too
be
is that
good,
we need
y'all.
to that the what gets me, right? And I think that this is something that we really need to start to look into and consider, is that a lot of these people that we vote for, they get into office and then they go for self-interest. And I don't even mean like top tier office. I mean, you have to just look at people at every level. We all got that one person that becomes a supervisor, and then all of a sudden they just start acting crazy when they get that little bit of power and they feel like they have somebody underneath them, and they just, they lose sight of what they're really supposed to be there to do as
But
a
you know what?
supervisor.
Go
Go
ahead. I'm
ahead.
sorry. No, and a part of that is the system is designed for a lot of them to fail because if you're not independently wealthy going into politics, like in North Carolina, you make $14,000 as a state rep. So you're having to lean on people who make donations, and when they make donations, you kind of feel like you're indebted to their agenda. And that's where the issue lies. Like, who can live off of $14,000 a year? And I think that's the problem, because you have wholehearted people who go into politics and they've given up their lives, their livelihood, and then they are indebted to the people who are paying their salaries. Those are the people who are making donations to their election. They're making donations so they can feed their families. And all this dark money, all this lobbying, it's the system is so broken for people, for the regular people like ourselves to be able to come in and make a difference and have our voices heard, that if we don't band together, it's just going to continually get worse. The rich are going to keep getting richer and the poor are going to keep getting poorer. And that's why I say I don't know why we are fixated on idolizing people, millionaires and billionaires. They are not our friends. I'm gonna back
You're
up.
okay. You're absolutely correct. So now that Tay has spilled the tea, we need to come up with some solutions. And this is what I propose that people start doing: filing lawsuits and get in the courts.
Well, see, no, I do not propose people start doing stuff like that because let me tell you something. If I'm a millionaire, you take me to court, then we just gonna spend the rest of how much ever time in court until you can't pay for court no more. And this is why I feel like it's not about resistance, it's about reformation. There needs to be a new way to do things, right? Because I think that we've been kind of out strategized based on the things that we've continued to do, right? Think about it. We used to rally and protest a lot, and that's how a lot of things got done in the past. Now they make it illegal for you to do that because now it's automatically a riot, and as soon as one thing happens, now everybody can be arrested. You know what I mean? There's so many things that we did before and that we tried to do that just did not. It's not working anymore. There has to be something new. We have to come up with the new ways because this is a completely different animal now. Like we are up against like what is it, a Decepticon or something, where it's just like all these things just put together. I mean, we're up against
David and
the
Goliath.
courts. We're up against the courts, billionaires and politicians all at the same time. There's no
And we have to hit them in
separation
their
anymore.
pockets. No, we have to hit them in the pockets. But and however, we have to remember the boycotts and the strikes that took place back in the day, they lasted for years.
Yes,
30
and
days
while
boycott didn't
people
do.
around here don't even want to just take a day or two from not buying from these organizations that are taking away reversing their DEI, I digress.
But part of that is in the messaging. It's the innocence of the people. I'm going to give people grace. It's the innocence of the people. It's in the messaging. The messaging is so deceptive now that people are not listening anymore. And I can respect that they're not because it is very deceptive. So the average person now, when you use the word DEI, they really don't fully have an understanding of what that means. When you say you're removing DEI, what that program really actually ever brought them. Maikia mentioned that the old way is not working. I think the old way worked. We're living on it, we're standing on it today, but we need to perfect, improve, and teach people about the old way. Mobilization still works. Getting attention to your cause is mobilization. That still works. Walking, rallying, making a cry, that still works, but we need to do it in a different way. There's a different technology there. There's all of these technology apps that people are listening to and getting misinformation. Maybe we need to be feeding good information into these apps and beating these people at their own game. So there are many things. I don't believe that we have to reinvent the wheel because personally, people, I don't have enough time left to reinvent a whole wheel. We need to perfect what we already have, build upon it, and improve upon it to get our messaging clear, get our messaging out. We need to continue to educate. We need to build coalitions. We need to build our power with existing like-minded organizations and like-minded groups. We're not the only silo, the only people here. There are other groups that have the same thoughts, the same feelings, the same passions that we do. We need to build that power, find those groups, join those groups, get in the movement. There are so many people that are just not in the movement. They don't know how to get in the movement. We have family members that don't even know what we do every day of our lives, that we're activists. They don't know what we're doing. We need to share that message, get that message one person at a time. If you're in a Sunday school class on Sunday, tell your Sunday school people about what DEI means. What did it bring to the table? Give them a historical perspective of affirmative action, how that became under attack, and slowly you start hitting it DEI. DEI is not a bad word. Somehow they've made it bad words on certain media network. It's not a bad word. It's accessibility. And it goes back to this conversation to me. It goes back to power. Who wants the power? Who's in the power? Who has the power to decide whether or not I have enough merit to get the job? It's about power. And it's always been about power. The 20s, the 30s, the 40s, Jim Crow, all the acts of
Segregation.
suppression, that's all about power. And think about who had the power then and who wants the power now.
Oh, you own something now, sir. People power is the greatest weapon. And I think that's what sums all of this up. And we have to get our people power activated.
And we need to start with the kids. We need it. We need it. We need to remember that it starts at home. So the things that they're taking out of the school, we need to remember to teach at home. We need to remember to tell our kids that no matter who hides our history, this is why you have mom, dad, grandma, grandpa. We will remind you of our history. And I think that, and I'm not going to say our age demographics here, but I would say
Right.
that we're so much closer to that movement, we understand it. We have to remind our kids that they have these pleasures and these luxuries because of the people who raised us, the people who had to go through those struggles and who had to get denied the jobs and who had to work those jobs that they felt that they should have been in higher position. We need to remind the kids that no matter what happens, you have people such as us who will still tell the history, no matter what, we will still tell the history the right way.
I love that too, and I'm so glad you brought that up because I don't care who removed these holidays and these months off of their calendar. It doesn't matter. It's up to us. It's up to the individual to tell their own story and their own history. It does not matter. No one has control of that. You got a mouth and you can talk. Tell your own history. It's your responsibility to tell it at your house. Tell your history. Tell it to your neighbors. Tell it to your coworker every time you can. We have rich histories, legacies that can be discussed, and that's what we're doing now.
And I'm glad that you both said that, right? Because I think a huge part, because Tay said, you know what, we have to teach our kids, we have to get the younger generation involved. And as a not so young person, but definitely not old in the least, I think that a huge thing that we love to do, and this is generational, and this has been every generation, is blame the one behind us. And I think that we need to start taking accountability because at the end of the day, the younger generation didn't let this happen. The younger generation did not let this happen. The younger generation is not the reason why we are where we are. The younger generation didn't vote for these things. They couldn't. So a lot of the things that we're going.
Wait a minute now,
I'm
because you finna
talking
start
about the
something
ones,
for
talking about
real.
some of the ones. Wait a minute. The ones behind me, right? The ones behind me could not the first time. I'll tell you that right now because let me tell you something. I remember the first time I was able to vote. I wasn't able to vote, right? Until I wasn't able to vote in a federal election until I was almost 22 years old. Okay, so we have to understand that the way that these things fall and everything like that, we're not always able to do so. And I think that a lot of times we try to put the blame on something else, on another generation or another demographic or another group of people. Because I can say, as a part of the 92%, hint, hint, I did what I was supposed to do.
Well, I can say a part of the 78%, I did what I was supposed to do.
But
Okay.
you know what I'm saying? So
So,
I think that we need to start taking accountability for what we have allowed to happen, right? And then I feel
I
like
like the
one.
way you said we. I can buy into that. I bristled at first because I didn't know which direction you were going with my Kia, but you're right. I take accountability with the we in that because we can always do better. Obviously, we
You're
can do
right.
better.
And we allow that. And now we, once we, I feel like once you take accountability for something, you get that ownness, it's easier for you to fight against it and to change it. When you feel disconnected from something, you don't feel like it's your fight, or once you feel like it's not your fault, you feel like you don't have to remedy it. So I feel like once we take accountability for what we allowed to happen, then we can fight against it with more passion and more precision.
Well, bottom line is this right here. Staying silent is not an option. This hour has been hot with the tea with Tay. I know we've missed some things. One of the things that we've got to, and we'll hold this one for next week, we have to get the Union Buster of the Week in here on next week. And if you don't know what it is, go Google it because we got something to talk about next week. When we get back on air with Timmy Wiley. Also, before we get out of here today, I just want to make sure we spotlight CWA 3108 President Steve Wisniewski, the Equity Chair Phyllis Hancock, for hosting an impactful gender justice and implicit bias training on February 11th and 12th. And I just got off the plane for Orlando and ran to the radio station to come right on. So I want to thank all of my hosts for being here today and having my back just in case I did not make it. Thank you so much, Tay, with all of that hot tea. As we come down to the final minutes of the show, our Union brothers and sisters and siblings at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette have been outside for 26 months, 2 years on the picket lines. And yet, while they're striking, they are still churning out the news with facts for you and me. Let's show our support to them by making sure we subscribe to unionprogress.com. Just in case, I just want to remind you, CWA stands strong with AFGE and be listening out for other things to come down the pipeline. An hour is not long enough to be with you, and a week is too long to be away from you. You have been tuned into the CWA Human Rights Justice Hour Power broadcast. I hope something you heard today has inspired you to take action toward creating positive change in the world. Every person has the power to make a difference, no matter how small, and by working together, we can create a world where human rights are respected and valued. So I encourage each of you in the listening audience to reflect on your role in promoting human rights to effect change in your communities and beyond. Know that you are not alone in your quest for a more just and equitable world. When faced with injustice, it can be easy to lose hope and give up. But remember, justice may be slow, like the truth, but when it finally comes, it will stand. Until next Thursday, 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, right here on KYOK 1140 a.m. in the all-new 106.5 FM.